Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Well, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to the Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Jeff Fiegels in the Giants visiting radio booth in Cincinnati. This is where we do the games on Sunday with Bob Pop and Carl Banks. So it's preseason, so it'll be Chris Carino and David Deal. We're here in Cincinnati. Practice begins, let's see, in about an hour and a half, 2 hours. That's when the guys hit the field. Practice, I think, officially begins at 3:20 or something like that. We'll be out there watching it. And, of course, Giants.com will have all the coverage for you of what happens at these very rare scrimmages between the Giants and the Bengals. And Jeff,
this is
something that the Giants have done before. And we will take your calls, by the way, at 201-939-4513 and your questions on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Giants have done this in quite a while.
Yeah.
The last time they did it, didn't go so well.
No, and I was there. 05.
Explain to the fans.
The other team from New York.
Explain to the fans what didn't go so well in 2005 when the Giants and the Jets had their last scrimmage together.
Well, what happens, you just have, you're hearing about all the tempers flying, but Shockey got hit in the back.
That's Jeremy Shockey.
Jeremy Shockey. And next thing you know, it just escalated to another fight in training camp. But this was a big one. They calmed everybody down, and then everybody, gets back to normal. The coaches pull everybody off, say, type it down, and then you just kind of hopefully it doesn't happen again, because what it does is it just sets back practice.
Did it happen again?
It just doesn't go away. But and I know what you're getting at. The Giants and the Cincinnati Bengals do not want to see that today.
And that's the trick.
And they want to be able to get their work done. This is a great opportunity for both teams to work against each other. It's boring right now from training camp, going against the same guys every single day. So this is it's a good chance for these guys to go against an opponent. They haven't studied them much, and it's a good chance for the younger guys to understand the real tempo of the National Football League.
And I thought it was interesting. John Beeson spoke to the media today, and he talked about, especially for him, and it's probably the case for most of the starters, these 2 days of practice are actually more valuable than the game on Friday.
Oh,
because
no,
they're going to get, 10, 15 snaps on Friday night? You know what? They're going to get 30, 40 reps over the course of the next 2 days against a live opponent. That's very rare, and it could be very helpful.
It's very helpful, and I think the veterans get a lot out of this scrimmage that they're going to go to, just for what you said, because, they get one series, and, John, even they may not even go 15 plays. They might go that 6 plays in a series, and they're done.
It all depends how quickly they score or punt.
Exactly. and the other guys, the veterans, they can get an individual drill. So what they'll do today is they're going to go out there, they're going to have each team's going to separate, and they're going to do their own warm-ups and things like that, and then there's going to be drills and that each one, they're going to be a 9-on-7 drill, which we want to see. There's going to be individual drills where the offensive line go against the defensive line and one on. That's when the reps come in. That's when they get to go against a guy they haven't seen. And that's when the team and the coaches are now they're starting to evaluate these guys on this practice and tomorrow's practice.
And once you get into the team portions of practice today, they're going to split basically the practice in two.
Yeah.
On one field, Jeff, you're going to have the Giants offense working against the Bengals defense. On the other field, you're going to have the Bengals offense working against the Giants defense. So
Correct. Those
things are going to be going on simultaneously. So we'll try to keep an eye on both, and we'll, of course, try to get as many highlights up on Giants.com as possible. But you're going to see both these units going at the same time against people they've never seen before. And I thought Bob Papa asked a great question. I forget who he was speaking to. He was doing some interview with somebody, and he asked him this question. I thought it was a great one. It was Imani Toomer on a serious NFL radio show. And he asked Imani, how much in practice when you know the other team and your teammates so well and the plays and the game plan, do guys cheat? The defender knows what play is coming, so they're going to cut off your route when in a game there's no way he would have that type of information. And there's no cheating the next 2 days.
No.
It's mano a mano. You don't know what's coming. You got to be better than the other guy.
And really, in the regular season, it's not cheating. It's study. They understand,
right?
But here you're right, John. There is no cheating, and really, when you think about when you're going to evaluate those players, there is no preparation of knowing who the other guy is. It really is a true test of their ability and their athleticism.
I know Tom Coughlin was very excited to select the Bengals as their opponent in this situation because they were so good at running the football last year.
Oh, yeah.
I think they were the best team in the AFC in terms of rushing behind only Dallas in the NFL. And they have Jeremy Hill, Odell Beckham Jr.'s former teammate down at LSU, an excellent running back, Giovanni Bernard, more of that quick speed type of guy.
From North Carolina.
So
yep.
These guys, you know, do a very, very good job, and it'll be a great test for this Giants defensive line and linebacking core, which we well know last year couldn't stop the run.
Right, and that they could not stop the run. On the flip side of it, John, look at this Bengals defensive line. Okay, they're good. They're good.
Gino Atkins isn't a bad player.
So today,
okay.
Today, the offensive line for the Giants is going to be tested because this defensive line brings it. They're veterans and they are good.
And it's a banged up Giants offensive line. Jeff Schwartz did not make the trip, so he's not going to be out there. I imagine you're probably going to have Geddes in there again, along with John Jerry. Flowers is back, so we'll see what happens. My guess is that they'll have Pewitt left guard where they expect he's going
to
play this year.
I think that's where they want to
And then
him
John
to play
Jerry's too. Probably going to be your right guard because that's where he played primarily last season. And then at a right tackle, you'll have, of course, Marshall Newhouse and Flowers out at the left side and Rich Burke at center. So I imagine that's going to be the configuration. So basically, they hope to have their starters out there minus Jeff Schwartz, who now you wonder about this ankle and foot, how he's going to be able to maintain this thing over the course of the year.
And you think about, you know, what are they trying to accomplish with this today? They're obviously reps and evaluation, but you want to get through this practice and get out of it and healthy. And so they are going to be a lot of interchanging parts in there. So you might see Pugh, move to left tackle, and, you know, because you got this is what happens. If Flowers gets hurt again, you know. So there's going to be a lot of the younger guys. And really, when you think about the starting offensive line, those five guys that we know will be the starters at this point, the guys behind them, are more of a question mark. Who are those backups going to be? And I think guys like Geddes and the guys that we've mentioned.
Brandon Mosley.
Those in this type of situation, I think the coaches want to see how they perform against an outstanding defensive line. And I promise you, the guys behind those guys on the defensive line for the Bengals are probably pretty good too.
And they're going to see a lot of those guys too on Friday night when
no
they get
question.
A lot of reps. And you'll see the second and third team guys get a lot of reps. Those second, third quarter and even second half of the first quarter snaps are gonna go all to players that there's a good chance they could be on this roster if they play well enough. So they're going to be very important plays to watch. The fourth quarter, you start getting to the guys that are really working in on the back end. But first half, second half of that first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, you got guys that could be a big part of your team. Just remember, Jeff, all these injuries last year, and all these Giant fans, preseason games get boring and all that stuff. Well, I hate to tell you, the guys that you're board watching in the preseason, they could be a starter by week four if the wrong injury happens.
It's true. Question. And most of those guys on the back end of the roster are competing for backup positions, obviously, but special teams. There's those five guys every year that make it on special teams, and they're also, you know, they're position players too. The other thing we got to think about here is that, you know, this is if you're a new guy and you're a rookie, you're nervous today.
Absolutely.
You are nervous because you haven't been put in this situation, number one, practicing in an NFL, but two, now you're going to up against an opponent from the NFL, not the same guys on your team, and they're going to be playing these guys on Friday night. So the coaches in their evaluation are now going to see how are these guys reacting to a scrimmage in live situations and on the game on Friday.
Absolutely. All right, you guys have been holding. Let's get to you. 201-939-4513. Let's lead it off with Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Andrew, what's going on, pal? Okay.
Human history. He was a Giant running back. He was a gold medalist in the Olympics, professional baseball player, a Native American activist, leader, and an actor a little bit. Do you know who that is? Well, the answer is Jim Thorpe. He was actually on the Giants. I just thought that was interesting because he's such a legend, but it was when he was older. And my Gifford story is I met him, he and his wife, like a little over a year ago when they were promoting their wine store, their wine line, and it was near the end of the meeting. And I mentioned that to Frank Gifford, and he got real excited. Like, because a lot of people, they don't care. But he was like, yeah, he was one of the best athletes ever. And he was talking about, I think, the system back then, they had the three running backs, like a wing T, and he's like, if he only had a chance to play behind a fullback, and he got real excited. So, I was impressed and surprised that he was that into it, but he was nice as could be, and his wife was nice as could be, and I describe him as smooth on the field and as a broadcaster. And the question I have for today's practice, and the roster came out yesterday, I mean the starters, is Robert Ayers is one defensive end. So who is the other defensive end? And I think DeMontre Moore will play a lot. He'll rotate in, but who's the other starter? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate it. And Kerry Wynn is that second guy who's on the other defensive end spot. And, Jeff, to me, it wasn't a surprise, and a lot of people were. I wasn't, only because, to me, Kerry Wynn is the best two-way defensive end they have once you get past Robert Ayers. Now, I think George Selby's kind of in that category, too. He can do a little bit of both.
Yeah, but
I think
we know about him.
And Wynn's a young guy, though, that you want to try
to
develop. And I think he's earned it.
Oh, there's no question. He earned it last year. He had a great opportunity to be put in a situation. He made the best of it. He turned some eyes. He played well. You had told me John's in the building every single day. And he says, so is Wynn. He comes into the building. He gets his job done. He's, John and I were talking about this on the bus yesterday. Yeah. It's so funny you mentioned that, you know, those are the kind of guys you root for. Those are, not everybody's a number one draft pick. And, he's a smart guy. And I think that he's got a lot to learn. And I think that's why he's on that starting line this week, is to get the reps. And they want to see a little bit more out of him going into the season. You know, George Selby, we know about him. We've seen him play. We know how he can play and what type of a player he is. So we don't really need to see a lot of him early right now.
Even better in terms of Kerry Wynn, he spoke to the media today as well. And God bless Tom Rock. He was just trying to write a story. And he keeps asking, so Kerry, you soared, how excited were you? He goes, I really didn't pay attention, it was great. Oh, well, but you soared, you must have been at least a little bit happy, right?
You're
trying to get
reporter.
No, but look, he's trying to write a feel-good story about Kerry Wynn being
the starter. You need a little more information.
And he's just trying to get some type of happy emotional response. But Kerry Wynn was so in the mind where it doesn't matter. It's unofficial. By the way, the depth chart on Giants.com is unofficial. We should stress that as well. We can go through that over the course of the show. I'm happy that Andrew brought it up. And he just wouldn't ever say, I was really happy about it. I was satisfied. I thought I accomplished something. He downplayed it so much.
Good.
And Tom was just trying to write the story to say,
sure,
Kerry Wynn happy. That's all he wanted to write. Kerry Wynn happy about
being
starter.
It's going to be a short column.
Exactly. But you know what? You want that attitude. You don't want him becoming complacent and saying, you know what? I have the job. I'm happy. Let's go. And he's just not. And he knows that it doesn't mean anything, and he still has to keep trying to get better.
And you mentioned DeMontre Moore. He's going to definitely be in the mix. I still think that he's got a little ways to go. I still think that the coaching staff doesn't trust him enough that he could be in that starting position. But like John said earlier about injuries, things can happen quickly, and that's why everybody has to be prepared to be the starter, even though they may be the second guy or the third guy, because anything can happen on any day, and you can be moving up that depth chart. Those depth charts daily change, daily change in the National Football League, and not because of injuries. They change because of performance. You go out there on a practice day, and you have all these mental errors. You're dropping down, dude. You're going down to the next level, and then the next guy's moving up. So that's what's so important about National Football League, is that you've got to be on every single day, and mentally and physically it's demanding out of you, but that's what they pay you for now. These young guys got to understand, they come into the league, you're getting paid now. This is your job.
And a couple other things to note on that depth chart. We'll get back to your calls in just a second, and then we got full lines. One, the other starting safety next to Landon Collins right now is Bennett Jackson, the second-year player out of Notre Dame. As we've talked about, he's caught on pretty quickly. But that's one of those positions that I still think is very fluid. I would not read a ton into that. And
you can't with Bennett, knowing that he just came over from where he was playing last year.
And I think, and he didn't barely play last year, he got hurt in the preseason.
Exactly.
So that can still very much change. Just yesterday, or 2 days ago, I saw Jerry Miles out there with the ones with Landon Collins. And I saw two or three other people there, too. So they're moving people around
and
offense. So I wouldn't put too much into that. The one significant thing on offense I thought was interesting is that the Giants named 12 offensive starters. Now, well, that's it. That is an ingenious strategy by Ben McAdoo to try to play 12-on-11. I give him credit. It's probably not going to work. But the way they did it, they set it up so they have their two basic personnel packages accounted for. So when they play their more typical 21 personnel with the two running backs, Hanoski's the starter. But I think what we'll see most of is the 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end with the three wide receivers. So that's why they have Randall, Cruz, and Beckham all listed as starters along with Hanoski. So
yeah, I mean,
it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. And people were making it a big deal, like, oh, you can only play with 11, coach. But it just gives you an idea of their personal package. And you're right. I think it was, you can put it on there. At least you know who the three receivers are.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
But your personnel packages, it does make a difference. And you do need that either third wide receiver, or you're going to have Hanoski that's going to be in there as your fullback.
Christopher Doval, at Chris Doval 1, I'm surprised they listed Bobby Hart as a right tackle in the unofficial depth chart. And he was working at guard earlier in the spring, but I think with all the injuries at tackle, he's a guy that played there at Florida State. That makes sense to move him out
there.
Sure.
I mean, reps.
You need
reps,
the depth.
Reps. You got to get it.
Yeah, I absolutely do. 201-939-4513. Let's go back out to the phone and say what's up to Jason up in Easton, Maine. Jason, what's going on, pal?
Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
Good. Doing well, Jason. How are you?
Good. I had a couple questions for you and then one for Jeff.
Sure.
The first one, I'm wondering about the quarterbacks when they practice like this, the Bengals and Giants. Do they allow tackles on the quarterbacks, or is that off limits for them?
Well, you know what, Jason? I don't think there's going to be much full-out tackling of anybody. I think, and again, I've never seen this before, and Jeff, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I still don't think even in the scrimmage we're going to see the coaches wanting guys to get tackled all the way to the ground. Now, you might see it happen from time to time, because that happens when you practice with full pads, but absolutely not with the quarterbacks.
No.
But I don't even think we're going to see the running backs and receivers get tackled down to the ground. I think you just want to have a little bit of a hit, a little contact.
Thud.
And then a thud, and then you move on. Exactly.
Well, 10 years ago, it was all out live. You know, seriously. And I'm not being, I'm not trying to be funny, but that's just the way the game has changed.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, it was a live scrimmage, tackling, play to the whistle, as they say. Now, they will play to the whistle, but the whistle will be very, very quick. Because the best intent for both of these teams is to keep everybody healthy.
Yeah.
They just want to be able to do execution. They want to see these guys make their mental adjustments, and they want to make sure that their techniques are there and they're running the plays correctly with a little bit of contact. There's going to be some big hits today. It's going to happen. Anytime you get grown men around that have been hitting on each other, now they want to take it out on somebody else. So to answer your question, I don't think, and John, I think you're right, there's not going to be full-out tackling like in a game. It'll be hit, thud, whistle, and then call it off.
And quarterbacks are both wearing the red shirts. You will not see any quarterbacks get hit, and if quarterbacks do get hit, trust me, there will be retribution.
And that is one problem. I know this for a fact, that the coaches said, we don't want any fights, and stay off of the quarterbacks. That's what they're saying.
Okay. My last question is just for Jeff. I'm just curious about, because there's so many different climates of weather that you play in. You play in 80 degrees, 40 degrees.
Punt
and
question.
I know you remember the game back in 2008, when it was 22 below zero.
Oh, yeah.
How do you adjust when you kick a football when it's 20 below zero compared to a football when it's 80 degrees above? And I'll just hang up with that. Thanks, guys.
Well, thanks for the call.
I appreciate it.
It's a good question, and I tell you, you're not playing in too many times when it's that real cold.
Do you wrap your foot in rocks or something like that?
Well, it feels like you're kicking a rock. But I you just have to know your limitations and how you got to understand in that kind of circumstance and that weather, the ball is only going to go so far. I don't care how hard or great you hit it. So,
as we all know now, the law of noble gases say once you get into cold temperature, the ball will deflate and not go. So I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I had to do it.
You're probably right, though, because it doesn't go in Green Bay. I mean, I knew that in warm-ups, kicking, all you could do is kick it 35 or maybe 40 yards.
So, really, if you got in warm-ups against Green Bay, if you got everything on your kick and you hit it as well as you could have hit it, regardless of the weather, you're like, wow, I whacked that thing as well as I could. It was only going 40 yards.
Well, if you felt everything was good and you were warm and your hands were warm and your feet were warm and you could hit the ball. The problem is it's not only the football, it's you personally.
I got you.
You know, you're tight, your hands are cold. It affects the drop. It affects, so it's kind of a, it affects everything. Not only just the football itself, it's your body and your temperature and everything like that. So, you know, on a hot 80-degree day, you're flexible, your legs flying, and you're just, you know, the ball's flying. When it gets cold, it's not only the football, it's your body too.
And you're already up in your 40s when you were kicking in Green Bay that year.
Yeah,
right?
I was up in my 40s. I wish it was 40. 40 degrees. I would have taken it.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the calls. Jack in Ocean, New Jersey. Jack, what's going on?
Hi, Jack.
Do you think, from what we've been seeing in preseason, do you think Victor Cruz is going to have a solid week one game?
Against the Cowboys you're talking about?
Yeah.
I think Victor Cruz physically, Jack, and again, this is actually a wooden table, so I can do this now.
Yeah, it is.
I actually think, it has a Bengals logo on it, we'll try to ignore that. But I think Victor Cruz, Jeff, is fine physically. I mean, I just don't see him slower. I don't see his coming out of his breaks any slower. I don't see extra ice. I don't see him, you know, his reps are limited a little bit. But he seems like the same guy to me. And, you know, everyone knows how cautious I am in injuries. I never like to, you know, assume anything. But, damn, he looks good.
You know, Victor is one of those guys that we talk about that respond to injury differently. You know, some guys recover very well. Some guys take longer. He healed up, and his rehab was accelerated. He was always ahead of schedule when we were reading about him. And I feel that he's right on schedule to start that first game, and like he never missed a beat. And you're right, John. We're watching him in practice, and there's nothing that he can't do right now that would make you believe that there's still some kind of a hint that there's a little bit of hesitance from the injury.
Absolutely. He looks fantastic. And I don't think there's any doubt you can consider starting him on your fantasy team week one against the Cowboys, because that could be a very, very high scoring game, Jack.
Now, I do believe, and I'm not going to confirm this or deny it, I guess, but the fact is that you're probably not going to see him doing a lot at this practice, because you just want to make sure. And there's no reason why.
I think he's going to be out there, and he'll probably do some individual stuff with the team. But if I see him line up across from a Bengal, I'd be shocked, and I would not expect him to play in the first preseason game either.
There's no reason why. No. You've got a lot of time still left in the regular. There's preseason, and you certainly don't need it. You know, the first two games are really for those young guys. They really are.
Well, here's a question for you. How much are we going to see Beckham in live practice against the Bengals this week? I have no idea either way. I'm curious to see.
I think that we won't see him in live practice against them either. I really don't. I don't think so.
Well, we'll find out. I'm not sure. No one's really asked Coach about it, and if they have, he hasn't given a straight answer. So we'll find out in about an hour and a half whether or not he's going to be going one-on-one against, you know, Darquez Dennard.
I just think that, you know, to me right now, I'm not worried about the first four receivers on this roster.
Why
I'm worried
you?
About the six or the – well, I kind of have an idea who the fifth guy is going to be too.
Yeah, we really do.
But I think – you're kind of trying to find out who that sixth guy is going to be. And he's going to be a special teams player that's going to have to cover kicks and have to be that sixth receiver. And that's really what we need to look at here today and find out who can play that position. Guys like Corey Washington. You know, I mean, he's one guy is he going to make it this year?
And I'll tell you what, the sad thing, Jeff, I've been really impressed by Corey Washington. I've also been really impressed by Jeremy Davis. I think both those guys have made a really good case to be that sixth wide
receiver. You got a fifth-round draft pick. I think it was fifth round.
Sixth, I believe.
Sixth
yes.
round. So they obviously believe that he can play in this league, and that is a tough, tough decision that's going to come down. And a lot of times, you know, at the end of the preseason, depending on injuries and the needs at certain positions, you know, maybe they can carry seven receivers. I don't know. We're not going to get into that.
Seven's a lot of receivers.
That's a lot. That's a lot. But you got
unless you figure out a way to make Odell Beckham your punter, I'm not sure if that's going to work. He could probably do it, too.
You know what? I was going to say, he could probably do it. You're right. He's amazing, that guy. He's pretty athletic.
201-939. Hey, Jack, you got anything else for us before we say goodbye?
Yeah, one last question.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to be the third wide receiver?
Oh, Ruben Randall.
Yeah, or James Jones.
Okay, all right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jack. Yeah,
don't be surprised if you see both those guys playing a lot.
And I'll tell you what, and Paul Dottino continued to scoff at me when I said this earlier in the offseason. I thought we would see a lot more four wide receiver sets this year than we saw last year, and I believe it even more now since they've added James Jones.
Why not?
And what did I see in practice last week? I saw a lot of four wide receiver sets. And you know who I saw lining up in the backfield in those four wide receiver sets?
Tight ends. No. Oh, very
No.
Oh,
I saw a little of 13, and I saw a little of 80.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
Actually, you were next to me that day.
I was.
And I said, you know, and I'm not out of practice as much as John is, and I said to John, I'm like, oh, look, there's Cruz in the back, or Beckham. He's like, yeah, I've seen that a couple of times. So, yeah. So, you know what? Never know.
And
you know
what?
That's the beauty.
That's mismatches. That's mismatches.
Exactly. That's the beauty of having that complement of receivers and being able to – the other team is going to have to – it's all about matchups. How are you going to match up with four or maybe even five guys that can catch the football?
Well, here's your question. I mean, I think this is pretty simple. Let's say you're in a third and long, third and 13, third and 14. You know you're passing the ball, okay? Vereen's going to be in the game because he's so dynamic. You use him on screens and everything. That's one of your guys out there, okay? Then you know who your other three wide receivers are, Randall, Beckham, and Cruz. So when you figure out who you want your fourth weapon to be, the question you're going to come to is, look, Larry Donnell's not going to be a blocker in this situation because you're throwing the football. So who's a better weapon in the passing game, James Jones or Larry Donnell? Who provides the better mismatch? And I think you can make the argument both ways. That's why I think we're going to see more four wide receiver sets this year.
Yeah, it depends on who their personnel is there. They have good covers, linebackers or not. And, you know, down in distance, where you're on the field, it all dictates that. But it's a nice thing to have.
I'll tell you this, though. I mean, you line up, James Jones isn't really much of a slot guy. If you line him up outside with Ruben Randall and you have Beckham in one slot, and you have Cruz in the other slot.
And Vereen.
You try and Vereen come out of the backfield. You try covering that middle of the field with linebackers and safeties.
Yeah,
Good luck.
In my mind, you know, everyone going down the field is going to get covered, and your outlet's going to be Vereen, which has been Tom Brady's outlet. He does that pretty well.
And it's pretty easy to catch a 6-7 yard pass against the nickel dime defense and run another 6 or 7 for the first down.
And also, if you look at a little bit of highlight films that I did looking at Shane Vereen from New England, what he did last year, the guy's lining up outside. They line him up outside. So, you know, they know he can catch the ball. And you're probably sitting there from a defensive standpoint like, okay, we got a running back out here when the outside, who's going to cut? He's not going to throw to him. That's just a decoy. Well, you know, no, they throw it to him. And they threw it to him on a go route.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 201-939-4513. With you for another 1.5 hour talking Giants football. Practice gets going here in Cincinnati in another hour and change. We'll have highlights for you on Giants.com. And, of course, Giants training camp live comes your way tonight. This guy and Bob Papa will be with you at 6 p.m. live on Giants.com and then rest of the week on Giants.com and on MSG Networks. And they will have the latest from Giants camp post-practice.
And you know that will be the latest because we're here. And there's going to be things happening at this practice today. And Bob and I are going to love to talk about it. There's going to be a lot of action going out there. And it's exciting. I think everybody in the organization is excited to be here. It's a little bit of a change of pace. You're getting away from the facility.
Well,
you're getting
yeah.
to practice a bunch of guys, different people.
I mean, here's the thing. In my years here, I've been very blessed. Since 2007 when I got here, I've seen 2 Super Bowls. I've been to a Pro Bowl. I've done a game in London. I always thought I've done everything that I was going to do working for an NFL team. Well, you know what?
List.
This new? Something new this year.
Yeah, I think you're going
to
enjoy it.
I don't know what Goodell's going to think up for me next year. Maybe send me to Mexico City or something like that to try to do a game.
There.
I don't know.
I never got to go there, but I wanted to go there because the elevation is amazing. You can kick the football forever. You know, because you think of Mexico.
It's not all about you, Feagles.
Well, sometimes. I mean, I've got to think about myself, right? But I will tell you that it's an excitement. It's in the air. And I think these guys, it's going to be a fun afternoon. I'm looking forward, and I'm just happy to be here.
Well, I feel like this is the anticipation for the first preseason game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we got a taste of it this last weekend with the Hall of Fame game. And, you know, it's here. Football season's here.
Yeah,
fall's
I mean,
here. I mean, it's coming around. And Giants fans coming off the year that they had last year, we have a lot of expectations. The roster turnover, you got a lot of exciting things to look forward to, and this is the start of it today.
Well, this helps answer some of the questions you might have, though. For example, and I'm not saying this is a theoretical situation, it's not necessarily what's happening. Let's say in any given camp, the defensive line is dominating the offensive line, and you're worried, oh, man, our offensive line is terrible. Or vice versa, our offensive line is dominating the defensive line. Oh, man, our offensive line is great. Well, let's figure this out now. Was that because your O-line was great, your defense, or was it because your defensive line stinks?
Right.
Or was it because your O-line stinks, your defensive line's just okay? Well, now you're going to get to see these units go up against another unit, and you're really going to know what these guys are made of because they're going up against different personnel, which is why it's so exciting.
Pretty ironic that, you know, when we talk about competition in camp, there are certain areas that we have emphasized, the safety position, the offensive line position. And for this offensive line to be able to practice against a notable – defensive line for the Bengals, it'll be good for them.
You know it's going to be fun, too? How about Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie covering A.J. Green one-on-one? How much fun is that going to be?
How about it? I mean, yeah. So
you got Tyler Eifert running around. Could the Giants cover a tight end come out of the backfield? Tyler Eifert's a very good receiving tight
end. There's no question. And Giovanni Bernard.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
awesome. Remember, he catches the ball all the time. Ex-teammate of my son's, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, University of North Carolina. And his roommate in college.
Is that true?
That's true. Yeah, I got to go down there and say hi to him.
Good kid?
Great kid. Very well-grounded. A hard worker.
How have you not told me that before?
It's
that's awesome.
They're in the AFC. We never really talk much about the guys.
It's a fair point. 201-939-4513. Let's go to our buddy Abdul out in Minneapolis. Abdul, we're in your neck of the woods in the Midwest now. What's going on, pal?
Yeah, you guys are in my time zone. It feels good.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I think we're still technically in the Eastern time zone.
I feel like we're still in the time zone.
Oh, really?
Yes. Cincinnati is – everyone gets confused by this. Ohio is Eastern.
Okay.
There you go.
All right, what do you got, Abdul?
I was thinking about the Jeff Schwartz's injury, and I'm getting kind of nervous about that. But you guys are talking how the Giants have now joined the 21st century with their medical care. And, you know, I know they've been criticized. And you guys always bring up that the Giants use GPS as, proving that they are doing something more modern and kind of cutting edge.
It's one thing they do, but there are more than that.
Right, but how does GPS work? How does knowing where your players are help prevent injury?
Well, what the Jeff, go ahead.
No, I don't know a lot about it, John, actually.
Okay.
But I know the GPS, everybody thinks that GPS is like, you know, where you are on the field.
Per se,
what you're doing on the field. It's tracking a lot of the movements and how much.
Yeah, Abdul, what it'll do basically, it'll tell the coaching staff what players have exerted the most energy on any given day. So if they find that, just for an example, and this is, again, a theoretical one, this is an abstract one, it's not reality. Let's say after a practice, they look at the tape and they say, oh, man, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie in this particular practice ran 2 miles more than everybody else, and he expended at this rate of acceleration, he expended X amount of energy more than the other player. You know what? Let's hold back his reps the next day. Let's work him a little bit less so he don't exert those soft tissues and you avoid things like hamstring pull. So that's what they'll use the GPS for, to make sure some guys aren't getting overworked, and quite frankly, other guys aren't getting underworked. They want to make sure that everyone gets the same amount of stuff that they're getting done over the course of a practice. I know another big thing, too, in the NFL now worrying about sleep studies and stuff like that. It's another thing that a lot of teams are doing, making sure guys get the right amount of rest during the day and making sure that their energy is good and the type of sleep, the amount of sleep they're getting is ideal. I know that's something the Giants are really paying attention to. So trust me, they're doing a lot to make sure that these players maintain their health and are moving forward and are being put in the best possible position to maintain that health over the course of the season.
You know, last night I was after we landed, I was visiting with Byron Hansen, the assistant athletic trainer.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we were just talking about this last night. And from all of all of the technology that's going on, it's very simple. In today's world, just like it was years ago, there was three things that he said to me that still hasn't changed, no matter how much we analyze it and this and that. It's rest, recovery, and hydration. Those three things are not scientific. and believe it or not, he says, I don't care how much research you do and all the other stuff. Those three things are the most important.
But the key is to use a technology to make sure you get the right amount of those
exactly.
three things.
Exactly. And he said, you know, your mind and how things in your body reacts to rest, that is dictated by the GPS system. So, you know, the analogy that John used, back a guy down if he ran 2 miles more than anybody. Make him go to bed earlier. Make him drink
that
more.
That makes complete sense. I just couldn't get my mind around,
the GPS.
That makes complete sense. Yeah, okay, I have a question. I mean, not a question, statement. You guys hear that Geno Smith is out for 6 to 10 weeks because someone punched in the face?
What? I did not hear that. Is that true?
Geno Smith. Yeah, he just, just right now. Breaking news.
Oh, geez. Let me look on Twitter, see if I can find this. Oh, my goodness. Gino, this is on ESPN, and Abdul, thanks for it. I'm going to read it. Gino Smith out 6 to 10 weeks with broken jaw after quote-unquote sucker punch. He had 2 fractures in his jaw, the result of a locker room altercation Tuesday morning with reserve linebacker. Oh, boy. I.K. Enikpali, I guess his name is.
Right. Oh,
ooh. Smith was, this is the quote Coach Todd Bowles said to reporters, Smith was cold-cocked, sucker-punched, whatever you want to call it. He's out 6 to 10 weeks with a broken jaw. Oh, man.
Well, I guess he wanted to be like.
Jeff, has anything ever happened like that to you? Like, not you, but have you ever seen something like that happen?
No, I've never been sucker-punched, but I've definitely been blindsided by Trotter.
Have you ever witnessed something?
Yeah, we all remember that.
You know, listen, I
thanks, Al, for the call, Abdul. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I have. I've had when I don't remember exactly who it was, but it was in Arizona. Some guys were, you know, messing around in the locker room. And this wasn't a fight. This was just messing around. And a guy tore his ACL. I mean, just screwing around, like, in between practices. So, you know, something like this. You look at what Cam Newton just did yesterday.
Yeah,
you know,
almost,
talk about that.
Almost punched somebody in the helmet like a jerk.
And then to have this happen here. So I guess you now know who's going to be your starter if you're a Jets
fan. Wow. Geno Smith, can that kid catch a break? I mean, the poor kid's getting booed at scrimmages before the season even starts. Now his teammates punches him in the face and he's out 6 to 10 weeks. I mean, come on, man. You can't make this stuff up.
And honestly, those are the things that drive organizations and coaches crazy.
By the way, if that player is not cut – in like
a
now,
reserve linebacker.
I mean, he's cut already? He's already gone. Okay, there we go. He should be. I didn't finish the story. I guess it was in the second part of it. He's gone, which is correct. That's ridiculous.
And so is Geno Smith to 6 to 10 weeks.
Oh, what a. You know what? Right, well. And so many people were down on him. I thought he actually might have a decent year this year, but boy, that stinks. That really stinks. That's too bad.
And you know, we talk about these practices that we're going to have here today, and you look at the Redskins practice and the fights that go on and things like that.
No punching.
You know, guys got to be smart. I know that I can't speak from experience. I never got in a fight in practice in my life. I mean, I never was put in that situation. But these guys, you know, it's not an extremely hot day today, which is good. Because, you know, when it's hot and humid and those guys are going against each other, it's tough. And you just want to stay away from any time of those altercations because – look what happens. I mean, there's your starting quarterback. He's
I just
out.
Can't believe you and Lawrence Tynes never got really heated at each other
now,
at some point. Just started throwing down.
Now, Tynes would fight if he could.
Well,
he,
you know, well, Tynes' dad was like, he's like, I've met Lawrence Tynes' father a couple times at the Super Bowl we were at. He's like, you know, former, I don't know if I can say what he was, but let's leave it at that. He's not a guy that you want to mess with. And I'm sure that passed down to Lawrence a little bit, too.
He was in law enforcement.
Yes, that's...
We'll leave it at that.
Well done. 201-939-4513. Pat is in Huntington Beach. Pat's up next. What's going on, Pat?
Hi, Pat.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
What's up?
Really enjoying the show today.
Thank you.
I wanted to share a story about Frank Gifford and I.
Sure.
And he's a wonderful, wonderful man he was. I used to caddy at Wingfoot Golf Club in Mamaroneck, and my dad was a caddy master there. And one Sunday in August... Frank came up, and he was playing golf, I believe, with Lou Norwich, if my memory stands correct, and two other people. And I was lucky enough to have his bag. And
nice.
First day was very, very congenial. You know, how you doing? Oh, your Pat's on the beach. You know, oh, yeah, I just graduated college and stuff, spending the summer up here. We get to the 10th hole, because the front nine was all just how far am I? He was talking
Are you on the east or the west? I'm following you now.
Oh, I'm in Huntington Beach right now.
No, I mean, when you were at Wingfoot, were you on the 10th hole on Wingfoot? I know the course, so I want to try to follow that, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah. So when we get to the ninth green, he asked me if I want a soda. And remember, I'm caddying for him. So I said, yeah, I love a Coca-Cola. And as he hands me the Coca-Cola, I'll never forget this story as long as I live. Now that you graduated college, what do you want to do? And off the 18th green walk off these two young men, the Christie brothers, Bob and Neil Christie. And I look over, and I knew them very well. And I said, well, a lot of young people around here that are members work on Wall Street. I think I want to go down to Wall Street. I had an interview at Solomon Brothers Wednesday morning.
Wow.
And I was hired on the spot.
Wow.
And
thank
Frank
you, Frank.
Gifford, oh, my God. I owe Frank everything.
Who would have thought reading greens would help you so much in your career?
You know what they say.
I want to let everybody know. I'm just one of 1,000 kids that he helped. He did this. He did this like any time for anyone.
Wow.
That's who he was.
Well, we continue to hear the stories either with on our shows or even listening to radio and on TV about Frank Gifford and what he did for so many people. And just a story like that just goes to show you that none of them are lies. They're all true.
That's amazing.
They're all true.
You got anything else on the team,
That's
Pat?
Great. Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, great story about the. I've always wanted the Giants to go 4-5 wide with Eli, and I can't believe we're finally going to get there. And I think we're going to be so dynamic. Now it's, our offense. It's really going to come down to Bill Parcells' strategy. Will we be able to run the ball and stop the run? You know, it really will come down to that. I think fundamentally, our passing game is going to be top of the, near the top of the league. Defensively, our secondary, I think, is going to be fine. You know, with the safety that we got, the rookie. What's he look like in preseason? Good?
Who, Landon Collins?
Yes.
You know what? From what I can tell so far, he's a good athlete. And the one thing I like about Landon, you can usually tell when a player messes up at practice mentally because the coach will pull him aside and yell at him and things like that. You haven't really seen that happen to Landon Collins much so far this offseason.
I was talking to Spagnuolo just yesterday, and I asked him. I said, how's the young kid doing? And he just said one thing to me. Reps. Reps. He needs reps. That's all he said. So, he's a young kid. Even though he came from, out of the SEC, he needs reps, and that's what he's going to get.
Oh,
he'll
yeah.
continue to get them.
Great athlete. So I really think I like our coaching, as always. I like our defense, and I like our offense. So, special teams will be, steady, I think. We got a real good field goal kicker.
We also got a new returner.
That's right, yeah.
So,
that was one of the things that used to kill us, the field position to start the game. We couldn't get the ball past the 20-yard line sometimes, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And
a couple years ago. So I think we're going to improve there. And, and that one thing I love, we're not on ESPN. You don't hear stories. The NFL channel, even the NFL channel, you don't hear a peep. I don't want any stories. I love it when we're under the radar.
That's a good way to have it.
Looking forward to that.
Thank you, Pat.
John, when you
appreciate the call, my man.
When you talk about Spagnuolo, his MO for his defense has always been attack, getting pressure on the quarterback.
Be aggressive.
And people have been, we've been talking about, this was a while ago before, that he's been here. And has his philosophy changed? Well, to me, it has to change a little bit. But when you have two cornerbacks like Prince and DRC.
And Prince, by the way, not expected to practice today or likely playing the game on Friday. The hope is next week for him. That's what he said during media avails today. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. So, when you think about those two cornerbacks that you have in a Spagnuolo defense, you can get after the passer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all of a sudden now you're thinking at the safety position, you got to be pretty confident in that those guys are going to be able to get it done back there. But when you do have two good corners, you can't put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And whether that means blitzing Kennard a little bit more this year and getting him to make some sacks and getting that defensive line to play like they did in 2007 with him when we went to the Super Bowl.
201-939-4513. Justin in Cincinnati. Justin, what's going on?
Hey, Justin. All right. You're right in our backyard, man.
We're doing well, Justin. How are you?
I've made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're here.
How'd the fight go?
I'll tell you what, that landing last night got a little dicey. Not going to lie.
Yeah. It was a hot one.
I'm telling you, I'm coming to practice with a John and Paul cardboard cutout. So you'll see me down there with my cardboard cutout to you guys.
Oh, please tell me you're making that up.
Making it up.
Okay. Thank you. Honestly, dude, I've seen some crazy stuff. It wouldn't have surprised me. I would have laughed if I would have seen it.
I figured it would catch your attention. But hey, I was watching some film on Bennett Jackson last night. The guy looks like he can cover pretty well. I didn't know what you guys take on him, as far as you guys watching him practice, and if you think he would be a really good compliment for Landon Collins. Obviously, Landon Collins is more of your in the box type of safety, and I didn't know if Bennett Jackson had the cover skills necessary to play that free safety role.
Well, I think it's too early to tell. We're going to see him get a lot of plays and reps, if you will, at that position. Coming off an injury from last year, it seems to me that he's healthy and he's doing well. But more importantly, when you switch positions. Until you get thrown into the fire in a regular, a real NFL football game, to me, I think that's what you have to kind of base your decision on. So right now, I can't make that decision, but all the indicators are showing that he could be that guy. And to me, more importantly, I will take a guy at any position, for that matter, that is smart and is not going to make the mental errors over the overly gifted athlete that's going to screw up all the time. Because in the systems in the NFL today, it's so dependent on knowing your assignments and being in the right position. And just by doing that, athletically, it can happen. So I think Bennett Jackson can be one of those guys, and we'll have to see as the preseason goes on and on if he'll be that guy with Landon Collins. I mean, I think at this point everybody's probably leaning towards those two guys at starting safeties.
Hey, look,
that's kind of the way it is.
And logically, real quick, you know, he was a corner. So you would think he would be able to cover. He has the athletic ability to play sideline to sideline. But remember, he was even raw as a cornerback. He didn't convert to corner until his sophomore year in college. He played wide receiver in New Jersey, a wide receiver his freshman year in college. So he's still relatively raw even just on the defensive side of the ball. So I think the physical ability is there to cover. The question is, does he have the type of defensive instincts and reaction ability that you would want out of a safety, which is really something you can only get out of experience? I think that definitely remains to be seen, as Jeff said. But you know what? I think he has it in him. Let's see if he can, you know, bring it out and be consistent at it.
Getting those reps. The more, you know, just like anything we do in life, the more you do it, the better you get at it. So that's what he needs to do.
Well, with all the injuries they got back there, I was just, you know, keeping my eye on him because it doesn't seem like Cooper Taylor and that Burhey have really been able to stay healthy. So it looks like Bennett might be able to get his chance, you know, to really show the coaches what he's got.
No question.
Absolutely. Appreciate the call, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
And it's a shame with Nat Burhey with that calf tear. Again, I don't know how serious the tear is. Everyone freaks out when they hear the word tear. What people don't realize is that, you know what a strained hamstring is?
Yeah.
It's a small tear. That's what it is.
Well, I mean, it just because I think that coming out of the season last year, I think he showed some promise. And and the fact that he got hurt in the off season and he missed a lot of on the field time. And as we all talk about mental reps are mental reps, but they're not physical reps. And then he gets a setback there. And that's the unfortunate thing in this league, John, is that, you know, guys can work so hard and it's going to happen. Injuries are there. And fortunately, it got him, and hopefully he can get back soon and start to compete. Got a long ways before the regular season starts.
I'm happy for Cooper Taylor. He's managed to stay healthy so far this preseason. And now, you know, usually when he starts getting into games, that's when he gets into his danger zone and staying healthy. Let's get to a couple preseason games first, but so far so good for Coop.
And, you know, him coming out of college, he played pretty physical. And
oh, I think yeah, that he's a big
think
guy.
And I think that he learned coming into the league last year and playing in some of the preseason games that this is a different level now. So you can't just throw your body around there all the time. You got to have the proper technique and learn how to tackle and stay away from those types of injuries by doing that.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Patrick in Michigan. Patrick's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Live from Cincinnati in the visiting radio booth. What's going on, Pat?
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks.
Listen, I just want to say, God rest his soul, Frank Gifford. I was very lucky, being a longtime Giant fan, to see him in person playing in the 50s and the 60s in Yankee Stadium. I also was lucky enough to meet him, as one time I bartended on the side to make extra money, and I volunteered for the Marine Corps lead, being the next Marine, and he was one of the presentations there. He was one of the guests, and I talked to him, and he is down to earth. We just talked football, just football, and of course the women around, they're all Google-eyeing him, but he was one of the nicest gentlemen. And you know what kills me? I got choked up when I think about it, because this was my team. You know, they won a couple of Super Bowls here over the years, but that was the greatest team. I can name the offense and defense, but that doesn't make a difference. But that was exciting football with Y.A. Tittle and the receivers, Schaffner, and, well, go down the line.
Well, Patrick, and you know what? The shame of it, too, is that that Giants team could have won a couple more titles in the 50s, too. They came really, really close, and they could have won two or three more titles if a couple of bounces would have went their way.
Oh, yeah. Well, in 62, I was at that game, and you talk about cold in Green Bay. That was the coldest day. I had a can of beer in my hand, and it was ice. But I'll tell you the game, your good point you brought up. In 63, this is true, information. Sam Huff yelled at Tittle and told Tittle, don't put the ball in the air, because Tittle got hurt. He was hit, I think, by Larry Morris or somebody before that, and then he threw up in a pick, and it was by Morris. And that was a game we should have won in 63 against the Bears. So you're absolutely right. We should have won. We won in 56, and then, of course, losing 2 to the Packers. But that was a great team. It was great living in that area. Football was king and everything. But anything, gentlemen, can I mention about the current team?
Yeah, of course.
The offensive line, how are we doing? I mean, I have to depend on the internet, and of course, my nephews use my season. I still got the season tickets, but they're using them.
Nice.
I just want to know where at the offensive line. Schwartz seems to bother me. You know, he's hurt again. Is there any improvement there, sir? Can we look for any help, any depth at all? I mean, Beattie was a tremendous injury, awful injury to happen. I appreciate your input, and God bless you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you for calling in, Patrick, and I appreciate you listening. And the thing about the offensive line, Jeff, I think right now it's hard to quote anything else but a work in progress, only because some of the minor injuries that, you know, knocked out Weston Richburg for a couple practices, knocked out Eric Flowers for a few practices, you had Pugh moving around. They haven't had a chance to get a ton of snaps together where they want to be, and to get that chemistry yet. So I think it's really important now over the next 2 weeks to keep this unit on the field. Hopefully you get Jeff Schwartz back sooner rather than later. But you know what? John Jerry started right guard last year, and he was fine in pass protection. He did a good job. So get these guys in their spots, even if you have to rotate a right guard a little bit, and get some chemistry. Let's keep these guys in the same spot for a couple weeks of practices. And I think that would go a long way towards making the Giants and their fans feel better about the group.
I think you'll see in the preseason a lot like we did last year, because, you know, the offensive line was a little bit of a question mark last year going into the season, too, when you think about it. And Coach Coughlin kept that offensive line in there to try to play along one another for a more extended time. So you might see that offensive line, that starting offensive line, play a little bit longer in the first preseason game than just that one series. You never know.
You never know. And by the way, it's calls like that that I wish, you know, that Paul Dottino was out here with us these early 2 days. But I guarantee he was there covering all those games in the late 50s and early 60s.
Yeah.
And he would add some invaluable insights from his post-game locker room interviews.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he had to write everything down back then, right?
Or he was carrying on a giant reel-to-reel recorder and, like, spinning it like that as he's listening to the interviews.
You know, Paul's probably watching this show. Hey, Paul, how you doing, buddy?
How you doing, Paulie? 201-939-4513. Let us in Columbia, Maryland. Len, if Len hears a caller call about the 50s and 60s, he's like, I got to get my 2 cents in. Len?
Am I on?
Yes,
you are on, Len.
Yeah, okay, good enough. Hey, thank you, Jeff. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
See you. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, you know, we're back. Football started again.
And you'll have Jeff with us tomorrow, too, so that's good.
Thank you.
Actually, it went pretty fast, and looking forward to talking to you as the season progresses. Hey, John, Anita and Lance yesterday did a really nice job with the difference thing, allowing people to call in. And I know I'm a day late. I couldn't get to the phone. I listened to the program last night.
That's okay.
Hope you give me a minute or two here to talk about difference.
The floor is yours, my friend. Take it away.
Okay. Thank you. You know, I saw my first Giants game, guys, in 1952. I actually saw two games that season, and from my record keeping, they didn't win either one of them. But it was a thrill to see Frank Gifford for the first time. As you know, that was his draft year, and he was the number one pick in 1952. And I felt like I grew up on pro football, and Gifford got me started, and he grew up as an NFL player, and he was one heck of a player. I tell you, the guy, you know, he just made plays. He just had a football instinct about him. And I guess the best example of that was, he played defense. He played running back. He played flanker. And he went to the Pro Bowl in all three positions. And, of course, he had some mentors at every one of those positions. But the guy could just play football. I mean, he just seemed to have a feeling for it. And, of course, that was a great period of time for the Giants, particularly when we got into the late 50s. And, geez, it was a great time for sports in New York. I know you guys don't remember it, but
we've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, and, Len, I want you to give the fans out there an idea. And I've heard Al Michaels say it at the Sunday night game, at the Hall of Fame game. He basically said that, look, there were two stars in New York, that Mickey Mantle and Frank Gifford, and they were basically on the same level. I mean, Gifford was basically Derek Jeter, right? I mean, he was that big of a star.
Yes, and he was. He was right at the top, and that was the golden era for football. I mean, that's when it all started. I guess you could pinpoint that 58 championship game, which, by the way, I was at. And unfortunately, I was also at the 60 game against the Eagles when Bednarik hit Gifford.
Ooh.
And I will say to this, although I must admit to you, I never wanted to see a repeat of that play. But my first instinct, as I think back on it, guys, Bednarik probably would have been fined 15 and probably fined a lot more during the week by the commissioner. That was a hit that was, well, he got away with it. It was legal at the time. It was a different game.
Dirty play.
It was legal at the time. But I'll be honest with you, and there's a bias here. I got to admit it. I thought the hit was a little high.
Yeah, a little high, I think. Yeah, just a tad.
It was just a tad high. But, hey, the Giffords credit, and again, that was an era. I mean, I was a man. If I'm a Yankees fan, I was a Mantle fan. But, geez, there was Mays and Snyder. And you know, between 1947 and 1964, except for, as I remembered, maybe 2 years, there was a New York team in the World Series. So that, I mean, baseball was right up on top, and we watched it every day, and there was just some great players. And of course, the Giants, Gifford had a great supporting cast, but the guy was he simply, as I remember it, you could count on Gifford. And I know, John, maybe I got it from back in the time of watching Gifford. You know how I say, is Eli playing? I always feel good when Eli gets out on the field. I feel like we have a chance. And quite frankly, in those 12 years with Gifford, I felt like every time Frank Gifford stepped on the field, the Giants had a chance to win the football game. My humble opinion, he's one of the five best Giants of all time.
Oh, no question.
Sure.
Clearly one of the five best. He's right there. You know, maybe LT's a little ahead of him. Emlyn Tennell, I saw Tennell. I didn't see Mel Hine. I'm not that old. But from what Dad told me, he always told me, son, Mel Hine was the best football player ever to put a uniform on for the Giants. But, you know, I saw Tennell. He was unbelievable. But Gifford was right there, and he played 12 years. Played 12 years and came back, missed that 1 year, but he came back, and a lot of memories and just a great era for Giants football. You guys, I mean, it was just, the game just blew up. It was unbelievable what was happening in New York over pro football. And, you know, you could throw out a bunch of other names. But, listen, thanks for giving me the time.
Thanks, Len.
Sorry I rambled on. But Frank was a classic.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, Len might not have seen Mel Hine, but Paul DeTino has sworn. You too, Len.
Have a good time in Cincinnati.
Thank you. Paul DeTino has sworn to me that, you know, Mel Hine was his number one guy back then. That was one of his guys.
Yeah. We watched the real tape on him. Yeah. I mean, I think.
Hey, those are great Giant teams.
You continue. Now, I did not. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I grew up with Frank Gifford on TV. I mean, I actually was playing in the league when he was still doing games. I mean,
when he was playing.
I mean, no, not when he was playing.
But I'm like, you started early. You didn't start that
but
early.
But just in the last couple of days, hearing these stories about him, it's just amazing to me about the type of person he was. But more importantly, how he was the guy here, man. He was a staple of the organization, and as Mr. Mara always said, you know, he's just the ultimate Giant, and will always be that ultimate Giant.
And here's the bottom line: when somebody passes, all the stories everyone tells are good stories. But you know, usually if a guy wasn't really a good guy, you'll people pull you aside, say, John, you know what the real deal was with this guy?
Yeah,
you know,
right. We're not hearing any of that.
I don't get any of that with Frank Gifford.
But the guy, I mean,
you don't get a thing.
Think about three different positions to be a Pro Bowl player, and in our Chronicle story that I saw yesterday on him, he loved to play football.
He loved
to make plays.
And to think that Bednarik had a fractured vertebrae, concussion, out for a full season. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Of course, when you have your helmets back then made out of like leather
and
what? Wood, whatever they want.
I know, I never saw that hit, but I'm just imagining it was pretty bad, and they felt it back then.
Right.
I mean, come on.
I got two more calls in the line. Let's get to them before you say goodbye. Frank in Tampa wants to give me one more thing on Frank Gifford. Frank, what's up?
Hey, guys. Hi. excuse me. I heard you guys talking about Mickey Mantle and Frank Gifford, and so I have kind of a funny story as how I became a Giant fan. my dad was with the Yankees for years and years, and back around 64, 65, he was managing in the Yankee minor league system. And so one day I'm at the ballpark with him in, in spring training, and I went in the clubhouse for something, and Mick's in there, or Mickey Mantle, he's in there, and he's got ice on his knee, and he's sitting around, he's reading the paper. So when I came in, he goes, Frankie, can you get me a Coke? So I get him a Coke, I come over, I give him the Coke, and he's reading the paper, and I said, what are you reading, Mick? And he says, and I guess Frank Gifford had, just retired shortly before. So he says, Frank Gifford retired. Well, having grown up with baseball and spent most of the winters in winter ball with my dad, I say, who's that? And he looks at me and he goes, you don't know who Frank Gifford is? I said, no. So he proceeds to tell me, and he says to me, I'll never forget, he goes, if you're a Yankee fan, you got to be a Giant fan too. So taking it from the Mick, who I idolized,
I you became a Giants fan
for the rest of my life.
That's a great story.
I'll never forget, he said to me, he said, the Giants are really going to miss him, but he said, at least I'll get my locker back. And I had no idea what he was talking about until years later I found out that they shared a locker at Yankee Stadium, and I finally realized what he was getting at. At least I'll get my locker back. So
that's funny.
Yeah, so Mick was responsible for me becoming a Giant fan. After that, I started looking into football, fell in love with it, and there's no bigger Giant fan than me today. So I just thought it was a funny story, and I'd let you know.
Great story, Frank. Thanks for calling in, bud. That was great.
How about it?
Mickey Mantle, I mean, this is fantastic.
I'm just guessing that the Yankees still were practicing down in Tampa for spring training.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
So he evidently liked it down there when he was a kid, and now he's living there.
201-939-4513. Final call of the show is Lawrence in Alabama. Lawrence, what's up?
What's up, Lawrence?
This is Brian calling from Florence, Alabama.
Oh,
okay. There we go.
All right, well.
I might have read that screen wrong. Let's see, did I? No, I had it right. It's okay. What's going on, Ryan? How are you?
I'm doing well. I was just going to get y'all take on J.T. Thomas and also the safety play. Looking at, that'll be three starters on the defense. What do you think it's looking like there?
Well, they got J.T. Thomas. He's starting.
He's the Will.
Yep, he's the Will. And
the one thing, he's not an imposing figure when you see him, but, boy, he's got some speed on him.
And I think that's –
I think that's by design, by the way.
Well, it has to be because the way the league is – yeah. You got it. I mean, listen, the backside of the defenses these days are so important. You got to get linebackers that can cover. They may not have to, make sacks and be the greatest tacklers in the world. Of course, you would want them to, but they got to be able to cover. They need some speed.
Jeff, even containing the running game. How many times did you see the Cowboys run that stretch play right next last year, and then DeMarco Murray cuts off the backside of that, goes back
gone.
To the you got to have a weak side linebacker that's be able to, cut off that edge.
So they go out and get him, and they're just, they're excited about his speed, and, he's not a household name, and, he's never been a superstar, but he's in the starting lineup, and we're going to see how he plays this preseason.
And he'll be a special teams player as well. How about the safeties, Jeff?
Safeties, I think we've talked enough about the safeties to know that that's a continuing process of evaluating who's going to be there. But in my mind, you don't move up in the draft to grab Collins if you don't think that he could play for you.
All right, Ryan,
thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it, man. Oh, that was a fun. You know what? I had a whole list of tweets I was going to get to. You know what? I will save all those tweets, and I will make note of them, guys, and we'll talk about them tomorrow on tomorrow's show. I promise you I'll get the tweets tomorrow. I got those two calls at the end and one to get them in.
Never enough time.
I will make sure I get to your tweets tomorrow. I got like 20, 30 tweets here I want to get to. So I promise you we'll get to them tomorrow's show. And I guess we'll go 1:30 tomorrow, same time, right here from the visiting radio booth at Bengals Stadium here in Cincinnati, Ohio. Jeff Fields will be back with me. Remember, stay tuned to Giants.com later on today. We'll have highlights from practice. You can follow the Giants on Twitter for some of that as well and on Facebook. And also, of course, at 6 o'clock, we have Giants Training Camp Live with Bob Papa and Jeff Fields. Maybe I'll convince Papa to come up here for a couple minutes tomorrow. Think I'm going to do that?
Good try.
I think that's a no. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're stuck with us.
We will let you know what happened to practice. We can't wait. We're looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.